Welcome to another edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live right here on Giants.com. Joined by Paul Dottino, I am John Schmelk. Come back, 201-939-4513, hashtag Giants chat. A little bleary-eyed, but I am here. And Paul, we might as well start first and talk a little bit about practice yesterday. I must admit, I've been out with the kids here. Been busy, haven't been at many practices. So, Paul, I'm going to lean on you a little bit during the show about what's been happening at practice the last couple of days on Sunday and Monday. Give the fans an idea of what you saw out there yesterday when the Giants hit the practice field.
Well, as Coach McAdoo said, a lot of energy in the trenches, a lot of hitting, a lot of guys really getting after it. But, you know, for me, and I understand, you know, the trenches are always the most important part of the game. Let's not kid ourselves. You guys have heard me say that 5 trillion times.
I don't know you felt that way, Paul.
However, well, they were full pads yesterday.
Right.
And they went for almost 2.5 hours.
And they'll be full pads today, too.
Okay. But I will tell you, I did think that the receivers needed to do a better job of holding on to the ball. I thought that there were a number of busted coverages in the secondary with the reserves. And those are the kinds of things that you want to clean up in practice. That's why they have training camp. That's why they have these practices, because you want better execution in the games. I think the thing that was surprising to me is that because the guys in the trenches were so energetic and so on point and getting after it, that some of the other positions weren't quite as sharp, if you will, if that's a good word. That surprised me a little bit because usually it starts in the trenches.
You know, I thought one thing, too, coming off the game on Friday night, Paul, was as you talk about some of the problems you had at the quarterback position and things like that. To me, what disappointed me the most is I didn't think that first-team offensive line created a lot of room in the running game. I thought Paul Perkins was met in the backfield more often than he wanted to be. And quite frankly, in the past, he's been able to make that first guy miss, but there's usually more than one guy back there. And you can't make two guys miss if you're a running back. And I think, did you think you saw some progress from the offensive line in the run game in some of the 9-on-7 stuff yesterday at full pads?
You know, John, we didn't really get a chance to talk much after the game. And I thought that the game pretty much showed me everything that I expected with some disappointment in the way the line played on that given night. The starters played 18 snaps, I think, was the number.
That sounds about right.
And I thought they were disappointing. I mean, that's the best word I can use to describe it. Because what I saw from the other units, specifically the starters, everything else seemed to match up what I've seen in training camp. But we from the backups, not so much. And certainly from the starting offensive line, they did not live up to what we have seen here on a day-out, day-in basis at camp.
I agree with that. One other thing happened yesterday we should mention. Odell Beckham Jr. did address the media for the first time since third or fourth day at camp when they had the whole thing about being the highest paid wide receiver.
Right.
Luckily, they talked mostly about football, Paul, and I thought a lot of stuff he said was interesting.
Yeah, for me, the fact that, and I'm going to paraphrase here, so please, these are key words that I'm using because I want to clarify this into a nutshell as opposed to 8.5 minutes like he talked. Beckham really talked about how he was haunted and woke up many times during the middle of the night in his sleep by the performance that he put on the field in Green Bay in the playoff game. He talked about how, as a kid, you dream about it. Packers, Giants, Lambeau Field, frozen tundra, playoff game.
Would you like me to read the quote?
Please go right ahead.
I will read the quote for you, for what Paul's talking about. The question was, how much did the loss to Green Bay in the playoffs last season fuel your drive to win a championship? This was Odell's answer. You have no idea. I really thought about it, and I'm thinking about it even growing up. The Giants' historical team, the Packers' historical team, Lambeau Field, ice cold, perfect conditions, everything that you can dream of and wasn't able to capture the moment. And did it in a horrible way, in a way that, you know, I woke up out of my sleep to it. But I used that pain, and I turned it into positive energy. I know that I posted on Instagram the other day. I said, if you can't see it, you're going to feel it. And that's just how I feel. If you can't see where I'm at, then I'll make sure that you do.
The man is intense. He is motivated. He is driven. He is determined. It is clear that Packers game just stuck him right in the ribs.
And it should have.
And any competitor should feel that way.
Mm-hmm.
I agree. And so he has decided that over the course of his off season, when he was in Los Angeles doing all of his personal workouts, that he was going to turn around that pain and make it a motivator. And so, really, John, is it any surprise that since he has come back here in time for minicamp and training camp, that he's been on par We've seen Odell Beckham do what Odell Beckham does. I think anybody who has watched him during training camp would have to say he looks exactly the same.
Oh, yeah.
He hasn't dropped off at all. He hasn't been sloppy. He hasn't been dropping passes. He's doing everything he's supposed to do, plus make one-handed catches, which maybe he's not supposed to do. But he does anyway because he's him. And, look, let's see what happens during the regular season and the playoffs this year. But I believe the guy. That's all I can say. I believe the guy, and I think he's going to have a bang-up year.
Well, with all the stuff that, you know, that's been said about him, I don't think anybody has said he's not a big-time competitor. I mean, I think it's pretty clear, and I think, you know, some of the stuff that's happened in the past, the source of that is frustration from failing as a competitor. And I don't think anybody's ever doubted his want to win and play well. So it was good to hear him say it, and you hope that he can carry that into this season a little bit. Has Ben McAdoo said anything yet about Eli in the second preseason game? I imagine not, right? I imagine we're too far away.
To this point, Coach hasn't disclosed his plans for snap count at all.
I figured that.
However, it is Imani Toomer's opinion, and you had Imani on the MSG show a couple nights back, that you know, he said, I can understand last year's plan when he kept a lot of starters out, that is coach, in games 1 and 4. And that playing them in 2 and 3 should be enough to get some of the older guys ready. So if you go by that logic and that philosophy, you would think he's going to play against Cleveland.
Yeah, you would. Or at least, you know, the 10 to 15, maybe 6 to 8 plays,
maybe
couple
a
of series.
Maybe. Maybe.
Maybe.
Maybe.
I think a quarter.
I think
a quarter for the whole offense. I don't think a quarter for Eli.
Well, the other day after the Pittsburgh game, that practice after that on Sunday, because they were off on Saturday.
Correct.
And then they worked on Sunday. Eli was a bit erratic, and Coach said he was rusty. Mm-hmm. He goes, he hasn't played in a game now, and he was rusty. And, you know, maybe that's the other half of – we're trying to pace the guy, and we're trying to put him on a pitch count. Well, when you do that, maybe he's not as polished as he wants to be. So you got to find that balance somewhere. Might he play a quarter? Maybe. Maybe. I don't know.
I got to ask you a quick question right now. I just glanced over your Twitter feed, and I know you limit the number of people you follow on Twitter purposely. Do you follow Sylvester Stallone?
I do not.
Okay, I was wondering how that got up there. I just got confused. Sorry.
It was retweeted by Football Perspective.
Okay, I got you.
Which is somebody that is on my list.
Okay. I was just surprised that Sly would be on your list. I like
you know,
Sly.
You know, come on now. You know what I mean.
I know, exactly.
It's okay. Just another feather in the cap, you know what I'm saying?
Injury-wise, where do we stand in terms of guys missing practice?
Herzlich is on I don't remember hearing about this too often in all my years. He is on a non-contact practice program.
All right, so he's not doing team, or he's doing only individuals.
And when he's in the team stuff, he's wearing a yellow jersey.
Oh, so he's actually in team stuff, but he's just not.
He's
doing
wearing a
contact?
Yellow jersey because he can't be doing contact. Now I'm
That's
trying to
weird.
Think. Now was he in? Was he in? Was he in all? I can't remember. I don't want to get anybody in trouble here, so I don't want to say exactly what drills he was in. But I've seen him on the field, lined up as a backer, but wearing a yellow jersey. And someone said to me, "What's that? Don't they wear red jerseys?" I said, "No, quarterbacks wear red jerseys." My suspicion is that a defensive player wears a yellow jersey because you can't hit him either. And it turned out that's what Coach said. He's in the non-contact practice program. Whatever.
Okay.
Yes.
Has Keenan Robinson made his way back onto the field?
Keenan Robinson is back out onto the field.
Nice.
Yeah, that's a good thing. And let me just go back to my Twitter yesterday because I did actually quote Coach's injury report as he was up at the podium. Corbin Bryant, the defensive tackle, left practice with an elbow injury yesterday. So that was kind of uncool for him. And also, Devon Kennard did not give any details, did the coach, but Kennard was limited yesterday. So that's really what came out of yesterday's
All right.
deal.
Folks, let's take some calls at 201-939-4513. Twitter, hashtag Giants Chat. Let's go to Dre in Atlanta. He's up next. What's up, Dre?
What's going on, Papa John?
How are you doing, Dre? Thank you. I appreciate
it. That's great. I never thought of that. That's really great.
I'm surprised that you haven't thought about that, because I've actually gotten that from a few people already over the last week and a half.
Well, you know, I must confess, my palate's a little different than that, so maybe that's why I was thinking there.
Fair point.
What's going on, P-Dot?
How you doing?
All right. Hey, I just want to give my quick assessment of the preseason game.
Sure. Go ahead.
One, other than the one hiccup with Flowers ran the wrong direction, I think he had a real solid game. That first sack, that Johnson got to get rid of that ball. He had Perkins out and open in the flats. He had several receivers open, and he just holds on to the ball. He doesn't go down through his progression.
Yeah, Dre, you know what? I want to jump in real quick because I think you're right. And I'm watching that game. I was at the game last Friday night. I saw people on Twitter, you know, killing Flowers for allowing these sacks. And the quarterback ran into him. I mean, literally, Flowers had his guy blocked, and Johnson ran into Watt. So
it looked a lot worse than it was.
And if you looked at Pro Football Focus, the analyst that did that game afterwards said that Flowers was responsible for no sacks, pressures, or hurries over the course of the game. So you take all that into consideration, and trust me, Flowers was not responsible for those sacks that happened on his side. He was not.
Right. Now, what I was concerned about was Richburg and Pugh kept getting blown back
Richburg,
during the running game.
For sure, yeah.
You know, now, I understand what Coach is saying about Perkins, you know, in that 7-yard run, God has to make that guy miss.
Right.
But after that, every time he got the ball, what move could he make? He had two subjects in front of him coming straight up the middle into his face, you know. But we'll get better on that. One, in reference, now, P-Dot, this is what I'm going to get on you. I think Geno Smith had a much more solid, other than the hiccup. Now, granted, that interception, well, two could have been, you know, can pretty much diminished his progress. But when you had Johnson in, there was no continuity. He didn't check down, and his head stayed down at his feet, never looked down the field and looked to run. Whereas with Geno, he went through his progressions. Maybe that's called a game experience, but he went through his progressions, and he moved the offense. It had more life. Now, other than that ill-advised interception, you know, I think if Geno had started, we would have had more points. We would have points on the board. Because you had Powell opening the end zone. You had Powell open up down on the goal route.
Mm-hmm.
There was several, and he really, Johnson never went through his progressions.
I'm with you in that I don't think there's any question Geno Smith had many more better plays than Josh Johnson did. Let's not kid ourselves.
And I think the offense looked more like itself with Geno Smith
no
on
question.
The center.
And I told
I agree with
Lance,
Trey there too.
Lance and I said that on yesterday's show. But here's the problem, okay? I was talking to some of the Jets beat writers who happened to do both teams, and they actually had covered both teams. They covered Geno when he was with the Jets. And I said, I didn't watch Geno closely when he played with the Jets over his career. But was that not a microcosm of what Geno Smith was with the Jets?
Yeah.
That you would see moving the ball, you would see nice passes, you would see control, athleticism, assertiveness, and then all of a sudden, boom, horrible interception.
And, you know, Dre, I agree with Paul on that, and I agree. If I had to pick who I thought played better in that game, I think Smith did play better than Johnson. But I think what you worry about with Geno Smith is what he did in that game Friday night is what he's done during the course of his career. He has a cannon. He'll put the ball where it needs to be put most of the time. But he will try to force the ball in the areas it should not be forced, and then he'll make that boneheaded decision like the interception where it kills your team. And the question is, do you take some of those disaster plays to get, you know, more potential or – you know, a more consistent offense, or do you take the safer route on Josh Johnson, who instead of trying to force that ball into the turnover is going to take the sack? That's what you're trying to weigh here when you're looking at the second quarterback situation.
It's tough. It's really like apples and oranges. You know, you're looking at a game manager who probably doesn't have much upside against a high-risk, high-reward guy.
Correct.
And that it honestly, it's strictly your taste. What do you need? What do you prefer? I'm not going to argue that Geno Smith has more raw talent than Josh Johnson. I won't argue against that. It's just
two things.
Yeah, go ahead, Dre.
One, I'll take the high risk, high reward.
Well, you will.
You know, high risk, high reward, because one, I do not want to leave any plays on the field because you left wide open receivers, whether it's out of the backfield or whether it's down the field, because you fail to go through your progression. But I can't deal with the ill-advised interceptions, so I guess I have to take the risk with the reward, because you know he still has the ability to put points on the board,
and
so
he does.
Won't lead too many plays on the field.
Here's the thing:
you got to get past that turnover bugaboo.
Yeah, Dre, I think Geno will win a couple more games for you, but I think Geno will lose a couple more games for you too. So it's just a matter of whether or not you catch him during one of his hot streaks or you catch him during one of his downturns. You know what I mean? Thanks for the call, Jay. We appreciate it.
Real quick.
Nah, sorry, Jay. Looks like we lost you.
Okay. I want to make one point about this, John, because, look, it could go either way because neither guy was so terrific, okay, that you would say, okay, this competition's over after one preseason game.
Of course.
And, you know, Geno is one or Josh is one. That's crazy to say based on what we've seen. But here's what I will say. If the Giants are of the opinion that they simply need a game manager if Eli goes down for a couple of games, you could understand why they might pick Josh Johnson. If they decide that the high-risk, high-reward of Geno is actually okay because their defense is so good that they could overcome a Geno Smith turnover, an interception, a bad decision, a blown third-down throw that's awry. If they think the defense is so good, and you couldn't blame them because the defense is that good, they may just say, you know what, we'll take the risk because our defense can withstand whatever happens.
Or do you say our defense is so good, we don't have to score that many points. As long as our offense has put the defense in a hole, we can win, and that's why they go with Josh Johnson.
And really, so you could make a logical case
for
either guy.
Absolutely.
It's really – when you go to the supermarket, which piece of fruit do you want? You could make a logical case either way.
201-939-4513. And I think we're probably leaning towards different guys right now. I think you're leaning towards Johnson. I think I'm leaning towards Geno.
Going in, that's how I feel. After four preseason games, I might feel differently.
Okay. We'll have to wait and see. That's a tease, folks. Let's go to Bam Bam Bigano's in Rockville Center. What's up, Bam Bam?
Well, first off, John, congratulations.
Thank you, buddy. I appreciate it.
Best of luck to you and your family that's now growing.
Thank you.
You know, this is kind of a question for the future, and I was thinking about it last night.
Sure.
I think you have to say the biggest failure of Jerry Reese and his staff since he's taken over here is they have really failed on a lot of investments they've made. I think you know where I'm going with this, the offensive line, right? If you look at some of the free agent signings, the David Bosses and Jeff Schwartz, those things did not work out as planned. The Eric Flowers pick thus far is not looking good. And, you know, the caller before said he didn't want to talk about Flowers. He wanted to focus more on Pugh and Richburg. Those guys have almost become overrated because of – what's been going on around them. And I'm just kind of curious as to what you guys think. After this season, both those guys are free agents. And the team is kind of struggling around them to find their footing on the offensive line. This could be a team that needs four or even five upgrades on the offensive line coming next summer. When you factor Beckham and Collins, those guys are going to need their contracts. The situation with the line is not promising this year, and it might even be worse going into next offseason. So I'm just kind of curious to hear your thoughts on that moving forward.
Yeah, you know, Bam Bam, it's going to be tough. I would be surprised. And again, who knows what's going to happen between now and next March. There's a lot of time between now and then, so there's really no way to know. I would be surprised if the Giants don't bring back at least one of those two guys. I think there's a much better chance they bring back both than they bring back neither. And I think it's a high percentage chance that they bring back at least one of them, in my opinion.
I would assume one would be back, and I would assume it would be Richburg, strictly because the economics will probably work out better.
Yeah, you know, Batman, that's the thing. Here's the thing. I think Pugh's the better player right now, and I think Richburg, we'll have to see how he plays this year. You know, he dealt with that hand injury all year last year, and I think that did affect his play. I think Pugh's a better player, but like you just said, and this is the point I think you're about to make, Bam Bam, is I think Pugh's also going to be more expensive.
And right. I'm going to tell you,
so
I bet right now both of them are back.
You know, it doesn't really leave them in a good position. And, you know, Paul, I know you're touting the summer workouts, but every day I watch training camp live and I watch the report. Flowers is getting posted every single day in practice.
Have you been here?
I get that it's Olivier Vernon.
Have you been here? No. Have you been here? Have you been at practice and have you watched it? It's not about shows. It's not about clips. It's not about clips. Have you been to practice every day to watch every snap? Have you been there?
Well, I have not.
Then I'm sorry, but you're not getting the whole picture.
Well, Bam Bam. Hold on, Bam Bam, real fast. I will let you finish, Bam Bam. I want to give you my opinion on what I've seen at practice first, and then you can finish. No problem. I was not at practice for most of last week, so I can't speak to what happened last week. I can speak to what happened the first 2 weeks of practice when I was here watching it every day, and I will tell you what I saw. I saw a guy from both tackles that were up and down. They won some, lost some. I thought Flowers looked better this year than he looked last year. The idea that he's getting killed every play, I think, is incorrect. I don't think that's true. Is he where you want him to be? I think he's still getting better. No. But I do think I saw from practice the first 2 weeks until I left because my kid was born last week, I believe that Flowers was playing better in camp this year than he was last year, in my opinion.
And that's all I've tried to tell you. But see, you want.
No, should let him go, Paul. I told him he could go. Let him go. Stop.
Let him go.
Hold on, Paul. I don't have to be at practice to see. What do they take? 25 snaps, maybe in live 7-on-7s or 11-on-11 today.
I would say the first team reps for the starting offensive tackles in terms. Remember, 7-on-7, offensive linemen aren't in there, so you're looking at only team reps. You're probably looking at it somewhere between 15 and 25, depending on the day of practice.
And then there were 1-on-1s.
Okay. Yes, correct.
Okay, so in the 15 live snaps that he takes a day, and this is not for clicks, Paul.
Bam Bam? Hello, Bam
Bam. I think
Bam.
He cut himself off.
Yeah, we did not lose you, Bam Bam. If you want to give us a call back and finish your point, we're happy to get you back on, but we did not do that. That was a line issue.
I think the point being that I know that there are still skeptics and doubters, and they have a right to be. Because to this point, there is not enough evidence to show that there is significant improvement by Eric Flowers. There has been some improvement. Does there need to be more? Absolutely there does. And there are three more preseason games to show it.
And I think we saw – I think I've seen – I think Bobby Hart has shown progress.
He's shown more than Flowers has.
I agree with that.
But I will tell you, Eric Flowers and I've had a chance to talk to Olivia Vernon about this – Eric Flowers' hand fighting, in particular, is probably the biggest improvement that he's shown besides his conditioning.
Well, last week before I went away, I read the Vernon quote for people. And, in fact, let me see if I can bring that up, if I can find it, if I have it here.
And that has to do with the boxing training that Flowers did during the offseason. Everything I told you is true so far, folks. It's all translated into some improvement. And I also put an asterisk next to that. All during the offseason, I said, how much? I can't tell you how much, but he will be better. And that's what's happening so far. Incrementally better. He still needs to get better and better and better.
Here we go. This was the question for Vernon as of August 3rd. Vernon has not spoken since then. So this is the last time he was asked about Flowers back on August 3rd. As far as his hands are getting better. As far as technique, he's improved a whole lot. I'll say that. I know with Flowers, he's always working on his technique and asking questions about what he's doing wrong or what he's doing well. So that tells me he's somebody just trying to get better. See, and then he was asked a follow-up. He's asking you the questions, and he answered, yeah, we talk all the time. He's asking what as far as what technique, as far as what he can give you, anything to help one another get better.
You have a situation where I know he has been like the voodoo doll for many critics and skeptics over the course of the last few years. That's fair. He's a lightning rod for negative criticism.
Well, and look.
And he's deserved a lot of it.
Quite frankly, you have a guy that's picked in the top 10, and he's supposed to be a star, and he struggles there. That's going to happen to anybody in that situation.
So
no
question. What I would say is it is very, very easy. If you don't study and look at the facts as they are before you, it is very easy to continue to pile on. That's the easy way out, to continue to pile on to a guy based on his previous track record and his reputation. But if you take the time and the effort and you use your knowledge to study exactly what's happening each and every day, well, you can see the subtle differences. And that's the benefit of being able to be here the entire offseason and watching all the workouts and OTAs and mini camps and practices. That's what we're supposed to do. John and I were supposed to be watching all this stuff so we can figure it out. And all I can say is there are some people who necessarily don't want to or I don't know, unable to. I don't know what the deal is.
Well, I mean, frankly, even if you're in the stands here at practice, people have to go to work. They can't expect to be shown.
No,
at the practice
no, no.
Every day.
I'm not talking about the fans.
Right.
I'm talking about others who are presumed experts.
I also think, and I'll make this point, and even when it comes to me and Paul, I think when you, and we're not asked to do this, but I think newspapers sometimes ask the reporters to do this, and they ask the reporters to basically be scouts during practice and analyze player performance.
You're That's not their job.
No, and frankly, it's not in this. It's not like you don't go to journalism school and learn how to analyze a football player's technique in practice.
No, you don't.
I mean, it's a really hard thing to do, especially half the time. The way they position the media, they're all the way on the other side of the field, and they're trying to see stuff from far away. And I think that they're asked to do a lot of things that are very, very difficult, and they do their best. But I just think they're asked to do things that I think are almost impossible to do sometimes. I think it's very, very hard.
It's beyond the scope of their range in a lot of cases.
And it's not their fault. I mean, these guys aren't football coaches.
Understood.
I'm not a football coach. Like, if you want me to sit down and explain, like, an offensive line play and who's missing assignments, I'm not going to be able to do that for you unless I talk to a coach and I ask him.
It's difficult.
It's
hard.
You
know, and I'm
And I appreciate that the fans want the information. I think that's great. You want the information. We want you into it. That's great. But I just think you're asking a lot of people that are not football coaches, they're not football scouts. That's not what they're asked to do. And frankly, the fans that watch, you know what? You might think you are. You're not either.
and especially for folks who have only been watching a team or a league for 4 years, 5 years, 6 years. You know, I've been doing it for 35. Trust me. at this point, if I didn't pick up a whole lot, something would be wrong. You got to really, really dig deep and peel back the layers of the onion, like I always say, to really have a good feel for exactly what the situation is.
And you know what? You could still be wrong because you're not in that meeting
Absolutely.
Room.
Absolutely.
You're making your best guess and assessment based on what you see.
Educated.
But there's no way any of us know unless we're sitting in that film session with the coach and the players. There's no way.
Educated guess, logical assumptions.
Correct.
But can't put your finger exactly on the head of the pin because we're not in the room.
Well, and that's why when people call up and they try to say, well, what do you see from this guy? What do you see from that guy? And I know people think I'm a cop-out because I'm giving, you know, equivocations, and I say, well, I think this, I think that, I think this, I think that. Well, unless I'm sitting there and I'm inside the coach's head and his evaluation of the player, there's no way for me to know for sure, and the coaches aren't going to tell us what they're thinking.
Now, what I can tell you is,
right,
when you have been around a long time, and you have built up connections around the league with scouts and personnel guys and other coaches.
Well, that's different.
And when you're talking to those folks now, and they can tell you what they see, and you're like, well, I think I see this. What do you think? And now you start comparing your understanding or your logical assessment with folks who are actually paid to do this for a living. That's very valuable. And I'm telling you, Eric Flowers is doing better. That's pretty much a fact. How much, again, got to do better than that?
All right, let's go back to the phones at 201-939-4513. Let's have Bam Bam finish his point. He's on line four. Bam Bam, go ahead. Wrap up that call for us.
I'll make it quick, guys.
Yes.
Some of the things you just said were entirely false. We're watching videos in practice every single day. I don't need to be sitting next to Ben McAdoo in the training room when I see him completely whiff on his block once or twice a day at practice, unless these beat writers – you're suggesting they're doing something to their cameras to create an illusion. He is whiffing on multiple blocks a day, every single day in training camp. And I get he's going against Olivier Vernon, but those are the types of guys he'll have to block.
Bam Bam, all I can tell you is that before, until last week when I wasn't here, Flowers was better this year than he was last year. I'm promising you that's true.
In what regard? You just told me you don't know. Now you're telling me he's better. It can't be both ways.
No. I can compare. No, Bam Bam. Time out. I can compare what I saw this year to what I saw last year.
That's fair.
How I know exactly how a coach sees a player,
John, it's
or
the
certain
same
aspects.
Problems we're seeing though.
Sure.
It's not like every single player.
So
like
Bam Bam. Hold on. Bam Bam.
It's the 1-2 drive.
Bam Bam.
It's a game that happens.
Bam Bam. Did I ever tell you that I think Eric Flowers has turned into a good starting left tackle in the NFL?
Did Eric Flowers stink last year?
He was not good.
He stunk.
Did you listen to Olivier Vernon's quote?
The same things going on.
Have you heard Olivier Vernon talk about the guy he's going up against?
Show me a quote of any player bashing his teammate, and then I'll take that quote into consideration. It's meaningless.
Bam Bam.
He's just answering the question, going through the motions.
Bam Bam. What exactly did I say that you disagree with about Eric Flowers?
I disagree with you guys are saying that we can't tell whether he's getting better or not.
I didn't say that.
I've seen clips of this. You just said, unless you're in the room, unless you're an expert, there's no way to know. But there is. When my eyes see him whiffing on blocks in practice every day, it's the same continuation of the problems that he's had.
Vernon
might say he's looking good, but in that same quote, they ask him about 8 players.
Okay.
Well, he's really looking good. He's working hard out here. They say the same thing about every player. He's not going to bash his teammate.
Bam Bam, I did not say you can't. Bam Bam, I didn't say. No, Bam Bam, you're right about that. You're absolutely right about. I'm not going to disagree with you on that. And
so
will you let me finish my sentence and stop interrupting me, please?
I'm sorry. Yeah, John.
Thank you. Okay, I did not say you cannot see whether or not a guy has gotten better from one year to the next. The point I made is that you cannot make a total evaluation about where a player is unless you know exactly where you are in terms of the coaches. That's why when I say, from what I've seen and from what I could tell, I think Flowers looks better this year than he did last year. The coaches might see something different than what I do. They might think he's gotten worse. They might think he's gotten a lot better. They might think the same thing. I don't know. And quite frankly, they know a lot better than me. Again, all I can tell you, and I watched every one-on-one snap that he took from when I was at practice up until last week. And I said this on the show last year, and I was very honest about it. Olivier Vernon abused Eric Flowers in training camp last year. He killed him. And while Vernon has beat him from time to time this year, no one's saying he hasn't. Vernon's gotten
Correct.
The better of the matchup.
Correct.
Absolutely. In my opinion, from what I have seen from the practices I have been at, Flowers has been better this year than last year. Does that mean that he is better to the point where he's going to challenge to make the Pro Bowl? No. Does it mean that he's going to be an above-average NFL starter? I don't know. I'm going to wait and see about that. Are there still plenty of reasons to be concerned? Absolutely. No one's debating that. So I think we're much more on the same page than you think.
He just wants to stick pins in a voodoo doll. That's all he wants to
Paul,
do.
You...
No,
stop.
Actually, Paul, you're the complete opposite.
Here's what you don't understand. And, of course, I've seen thousands of practices in 35 years, known hundreds of coaches, hundreds of scouts, and thousands of players. Here's what you don't understand. And, John, I don't even know if you've been told this. It happens to be a fact that in training camp, every single offensive and defensive lineman will tell you that the defensive lineman, specifically the defensive end, will always have the upper hand on every snap in training camp. And this is something you would not know because you're on the other side of the fence. Now, why does that happen? It's because they all know the plays, they all know the snap count, and they all know the tempo of the play. Therefore, every single time when you look at that individual matchup, you must take into account that there is a curve. Because the defensive lineman, especially the end who has quickness, will automatically, going into that play in practice, have an edge. But you didn't know that, did
wow.
you? Because you were on the other side of the fence.
You didn't know that.
I'm giving
you
up.
Didn't know that.
He's
done. He's done.
Every single episode.
He's done.
Paul. Why are you getting so upset for?
Because I want the fan to be educated. I don't want him to
Paul, in
throw
fairness,
mud against the wall.
When we were in 2008, the Giants had the awesome offensive line. You didn't see the defensive line beating them all over the place? In fairness, you didn't. Right? Be honest.
That was a really, really good line.
But?
A really good
You
line.
Saw that in practice, though, didn't you?
Yeah, but in training camp, the defensive line beat them.
Not consistently.
Not as much as it's happened now.
Right. And that's
because
all we're
it was
saying.
A better line. But
and that's all. And
because
look,
there is an inherent edge.
And look, you're right. People, I think, go over the top and they find the target they want to go after. When they find the guy that they want to go after. There's no question about it. I agree with that 100%. But I do think there is it's logical sense to have a fair level of concern.
If he doesn't get better, if Eric Flowers doesn't get better and better and better, the Giants are going to have to deal with it. It's that simple. He's not at the level they need him to be.
And I don't think we have the answer to that yet.
And that's all you were trying to say, and that's all I'm trying to say. He's getting there, but he's not there yet. And he better get there, or they've got a problem.
All right, let's go to John in Florida. He says next. What's going on, John? How are you?
Good morning, gentlemen. Appreciate you taking my call.
No problem.
You know, the Giants realistically have in their current roster of players some really significant talent there. My question is, they're not going to be able to retain all of the people when the roster is cut down. What is it, 55 players?
Okay.
Who do you think on the team? And I know this is a little premature, but give some thought to this as we progress. Who do you think on the team will pass through the wires to get onto the practice squad?
It's a good question. I'm thinking.
Wow.
Okay. Here are my initial thoughts. And again, like you said, John, it is early, so me and Paul have we reserve the right to change our mind in the next 2 weeks. I will say this, John. I think Wheeler, the left tackle, I think is a guy that I would not be surprised at all to see on the practice squad this year. Assuming Biznavati is the guy that makes the 53. Because I don't think both those guys are on the 53. I think one of those two are on the practice squad.
I concur.
And I think there's a better chance of Wheeler getting through than Biznavati just based on their draft stock is my thought. But who knows? Maybe not. Maybe it's the other way around. So I would say one of those two offensive tackles.
Makes sense.
Let's see. Who else would I think could sneak up onto that practice squad?
I could see a fullback going there.
Yes. I could see the Houseman or Smith. Depending on
Smith
one.
Smith has the edge right now.
Correct. But if Smith makes the roster, then he would not be on the practice squad per se.
Mm-hmm.
I think Darius Powell is another practice squad potential person. He's a guy that could be there. Is Roger Lewis practice squad eligible?
I don't know the answer.
And I'm not
that.
Sure he would get through anyway.
I don't think he would.
I guarantee you'll see one or two wide receivers on there because you know why you mm-hmm. always do.
Mm-hmm. You'll see probably a defensive lineman on there too.
And you'll probably see a tight end on there, right? Depending on how many you keep. If they keep four, probably not. If you keep three, probably yes.
And you'll see somebody in the secondary probably on the practice squad too.
You always want to keep an extra
DB.
You'll have at least one DB, usually two on the practice squad, to be honest with
and
you.
And it wouldn't be out of the question that somebody like Abdullah, the FCS running back who's
I was
in camp,
say.
He might go there.
I mean, assuming you're
so
only
deep on the depth
if
chart.
Your only three running backs are Perkins, Gallman, and Vereen on the active 53, Darkwa would be four. I think you could see a running back on there. That wouldn't surprise me. And will they put a quarterback on there? Because they've had a quarterback on there before doing scout stuff. So I think if you keep three, I would think probably not. But
I would doubt it.
I would doubt it.
Yeah.
But any other names in particular think jump out to you? I think Travis Rudolph's a consideration if he doesn't make the 53. Him and Darius Powell who are on the fringe there.
I'll give you one more.
Mm-hmm.
And I guarantee you didn't think of it, but it's an oddball one. If Rosas doesn't beat out Nugent, they will try to get Rosas, I bet you, to the practice squad.
Yeah, I'd be surprised if he doesn't, though.
I think Rosas will win.
I think he's the leg up right now.
But if for some reason he doesn't, right. I think they try to keep him in the house. I also think someone would grab him.
Yeah, and you definitely get a defensive lineman on there. I'm trying to think of the young guys in camp who would jump out to me. I'll have to think about that, John. Good call. Thanks for the call, man. We appreciate it. Let's go to John in the Swamp. He's up next. And what's going on, John? How are you? John, you got to turn your computer volume down. We'll give you one more chance. John, you there. Do me a favor. Put John back on hold for me, and we'll try him back. John, we're going to go back to you after our next caller. When we do, make sure you have the volume on your computer turned down and you're listening through your phone. But Dave in Cranford will go next on line three. What's going on, Dave? How are you?
Hey, John, first, congratulations. That's great news.
Thank you, Dave.
And, hey, the call before, that was awesome, going back and forth. You know, you guys were making comments. You made a lot of really good comments about just the coverage that the team gets and the amount of, you know, analysis that's done and some of it that's off. I think part of it is just, you know, a result of just how popular the sport's become. And I know, Paul, you know, you've
Absolutely.
Been around for a long time doing this, but the growth that you've seen and the interest – I'm not sure if you guys were aware, but Friday night's game actually in New York did a higher rating on TV than the Yankee-Red Sox game.
It happens. You know what's funny? It's funny. I heard that on the radio yesterday driving around, and I couldn't believe it. But, yeah, Giants preseason football did better than Friday night Yankees-Red Sox. Can you believe that?
And I don't think, even if we're thinking about listening to the same show, I don't think they really understood that – you know, there's a lot of people, myself included, a big Yankee fan, huge Yankee fan, been a Yankee fan my whole life.
Right.
But I was really interested, because I've been impacted by listening to Paul Dottino, of looking at all the different layers
that,
of the team. And, you know, even though I knew Eli wasn't playing and I knew Odell wasn't, I knew all that. I was interested in, you know, the backup lineman, and I was interested in how we were going to use a fullback. And so I think there's just such a high degree of interest. I think that then creates that these writers have to come up with some story to fill, you know, to fill the void.
Yeah,
you know?
David, I think the other problem too, and I'm going to build on that. I think you're absolutely right. I think the problem you run into is that fans want conclusions drawn about people way before anyone can fairly draw a conclusion.
Instant analysis.
Yes, like people want us to tell them whether or not somebody stinks based off of spring practice. Well, I'm not going to do that. It's stupid. I had people, you know, just taking it to a different sport. I got people calling, writing me, you know, tweets that Frank Ntilikina, the next first round pick, is a bust because he didn't play in Las Vegas Summer League. I mean, seriously? That's what we're trying to do now? We're trying to determine a guy's career arc based on spring practice, Summer League, and training camp? I mean, people just seem. And I know I'm not that old. I'm 35, but I feel like it's changed so much since I've even gotten to the business. People want so much instant reaction and gratification now before you can fairly give that analysis. And I know that makes maybe people think that makes for boring radio, and that's – I'm sorry, then change the station, whatever. But I'm not going to make a judgment on a guy based on what I see in practice or, frankly, against second and third stringers in a game. Like, if a guy does really well against third string players, that's great. That doesn't mean he can play against first stringers. We've had that conversation about Corey Washington before and all these other guys, too. I mean, it's just people want everything so fast, and I think when that happens, you get mistakes.
And I think you're dead on. And I would just leave you with this last comment and make you see what you guys think. And that is, hey, look, the team, we know the team is far from perfect, but it is a very deep and talented team.
Yes.
And, you know, one of the most we've had in a long time. I don't think anyone would disagree with that. But that doesn't mean that there are not weak spots on the team. And the issue is not going to be that, you know, every position is, you know, is going to be like safety or corner or receiver. You're just not going to have that. The issue is going to be, in terms of the success of the team, how can our strengths overcome our weaknesses? And can our receivers get open because they're, you know, and the scheme? And how is McAdoo going to use the scheme, which I think he'll do, to the strengths of the team? And I don't think he knows. I think he's got an indication, but he doesn't know yet what the full strengths of the team, and that's going to develop over time. But I think everyone would say they're good enough that if they can put those strengths against the weaknesses of the team, that they can be very successful this year. And then you see where it goes from there.
Absolutely. Dave, thanks for the call. And
good call.
And you can't have all pros at every position anymore. This isn't the, you know, the 90s Cowboys, the 80s Giants and Niners, the 80s Bears, the 70s Steelers, the 70s Raiders.
You're going to get me started on this again? The golden era of football, the 70s and the 80s, when the NFL was truly great?
Oh, boy.
I'd like to turn the clock back. You guys know that. I've told you that a billion times. We can't do it. It is what it is, John. Keep going.
201-939-4512. Let's see if John has heeded my warning and see if he has turned his volume down in the swamp. What's going on, John? How are you?
Hey, what's up, Smelt and Tino? How are you guys doing?
We're great, John. How are you?
Good. Hey, I just, you know, I was listening to the show, and it just really makes me upset. Everyone's dissing the tackles so bad. Honestly, I thought the tackles played better than the rest of the line did. I watched their tape over and over. Flowers did not miss a beat. I mean, I'm not saying he was Joe Thomas, but he did not miss a beat.
The tackles in the preseason game, John, were fine. They were fine. They were okay.
Exactly.
They weren't perfect, but they were okay.
Well,
I said they were fine.
Yeah.
That's not
fine's a little better than okay.
Fine is an effusive praise. They were fine. They were okay. Whatever.
Fine. Exactly. Fine. I mean, there should not be some outrage. Flowers, and he has improved. He looked quick. He was moving his feet well. He kept his body up. He kept himself in between him and the D end. What more do you want from the guy?
He's
getting better.
It's a very simple statement. Getting better, would like to see more. I don't know how you could misconstrue that statement.
And not there yet.
Right. It's a pretty simple statement.
Yeah, exactly. I was really disappointed in Richburg's performance. I thought he went to that O-line camp or something, Bentley camp. You know, he did some stuff over the off season. I don't know why he was getting pushed around so much.
Well, here's the technical reason behind that. And the Giants over the last few years, if you noticed, have had more trouble with 3-4 teams than 4-3 teams. Usually that's because when you face a 3-4 defense, the nose tackle, who is a big, strong, burly, blockbuster kind of guy, is lined up directly over the center in a 3-4, usually.
Correct.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Now, Richburg, and we talked about this with Len from Columbia the other day, he is an undersized center, much like Bart Oates was, much like Sean O'Hara was. You know, he's barely pushing 310, okay? So what's going to happen is in certain matchups against real big King Kong-type nose tackles in 3-4s, he will have difficulties trying to handle his assignment in the interior of the line. And that, of course, affects everybody else like a domino effect. Fortunately for the Giants, they don't face a ton of 3-4 teams this year, and they don't face a ton of really good, big, burly, quality nose tackles who have the physical advantage of beating Richburg to where he's got to be fighting uphill. Okay? This is exactly why they've got trouble with 3-4 teams. It's why going into the game again last year against Pittsburgh, I told everybody, this is not going to be a good matchup for the Giants because I knew of their scheme, of their personnel, and I also knew on the other side of the ball, they had the scheme and personnel with the running back and with the tight end to make the Giants look bad. If you remember, you know, I tried to tell people that, and then when the Giants got whacked, everybody thought the ceiling was caving in. And it was like, no, it was a bad matchup. That's the explanation behind that.
So what are you going to do? Are you going to double-team the big nose tackle? Or are you going to use the fullback to, you know, come in and give Richburg a little help?
Now, that's what you need to do. If you're going to be in those spots, and again, they're not going to happen that often. They're not going to happen that often.
Though,
look at the schedule.
All four preseason games, though, are against 3-4 teams, which is interesting.
And that, I think Cleveland's playing. Isn't Cleveland going 4-3 this year?
Pew told me after the game that Cleveland was 3-4. I'll have to double-check it and see what their actual formation is.
I don't scout preseason opponents.
Neither do
I. That's not something I do.
Right.
But here's the thing. I don't think they're going to face too many of these quality, big, burly King Kong nose tackles this year. So it's not a huge problem for the Giants. But now, if there is one, what you have to do is scheme it. Either you're going to make sure he gets help, okay, or you're going to try to find ways to keep that guy off balance in the middle of the line with the kinds of plays that you can use so that he is not getting a physical jump and advantage over your center who doesn't quite have the frame to keep up with him. And quite honestly, you just tell Richburg, you got to play better this week. You know, you got to play bigger than your frame is. And we just need you to hold your own. You don't have to win the matchup. You just got to try to draw the matchup. That's it.
And about Pew, all right, he's sitting there right in between Rich and Flowers. It just seems like a lot of the time, I'm pretty sure this is designed, but the pass rush, they leave Pew standing. Like, Pew is just kind of looking around, but holding his, you know, his side of the line. I'd like to see him get in there more and be part of the Flowers double team instead of going over to Richburg and helping him.
All right, John. Appreciate the call, my friend. Thanks for calling in.
We don't know what the line calls are.
No, we do not.
And
that, honestly, and that's why I didn't answer that question. That's just stuff that's beyond what I can really make a really educated comment on.
That would be like asking a pediatrician to perform brain surgery. It's beyond the scope of what we could possibly know.
So 3-4 defenses. The Broncos are a 4-3 now, right?
Yes.
Chiefs are a 3-4. I believe the Chargers are technically a 3-4.
Mm-hmm.
But again, folks, here's the thing.
But they're hybrids now, too.
And that's the thing, guys. Even these 3-4 defenses, when these teams play nickel, they play four down linemen. So they're only going to be in the 3-4 in their base D anyway. So, I mean, I wouldn't go nuts about that.
And again, remember, it's not just that it's a 3-4 team, but it's a 3-4 team that's got like a Ted Washington playing
well,
the nose.
Exactly. Or Sean Rogers or what Albert Hainsworth, whatever. Yeah.
Then they got him.
Right.
You know, Nada.
Right.
Nada. You know, those are the kinds of guys more so that are going to be a problem.
And by the way, I want to bring up one other thing, because this has kind of been something that's brought up all spring and all summer. People talk about, the guy wouldn't train the offseason to get better, going to the camps, also this and get all that. Folks, think of it logically for a second. If every single player in the league did offseason training and went to one of these coaches and went to one of these camps to get better, you know what? Their comparative skill level against the person they're playing against would be the same anyway. Because the defensive lineman's going to one of these camps to get better doing what they do. The offensive lineman is. So what's the difference? And if it was so easy to just go to these guys and get this training to become a much better player in the offseason, guess what? Everyone would be an all-pro player. It doesn't work that way.
As many a coach has said, the other guy gets paid too.
It does not work that way. Everyone's getting better. I don't know. Some people, I feel like that's become like this like panacea.
Yes.
Oh, do you know how Eric Flowers becomes a Pro Bowler? Just go to Bentley's camp and everything will be fine. Well, right. Do you know how many people Bentley has in his camp every year? Probably 100. Are all these guys making Pro Bowls? They're not. It's not a turnkey. Okay, go to the camp, you become really good.
Just push the button. It doesn't work that way.
All right, final two calls of the show. Marvin in Delaware has been holding the longest, then we'll get to Andrew after that. What's up, Marvin?
How you doing, John?
Doing great, Marvin. How are you?
That's good. I got a really quick one. I appreciate you guys trying to educate fans on about these guys working hard, trying to get better. Because fans usually don't understand that they want results right away. I have coached.
And that's fair, by the way.
It's
understood.
I appreciate what Paul said about educating fans, and I'm the same way when I talk to people, where I let them know. Unless you've done this, you don't understand it.
And Marvin, quite frankly, I haven't done it, and Paul hasn't done it. I don't consider myself at the level of a coach or a scout. I do the best I can with the information that I have available to me.
But you understand the game you're watching.
I try to.
Well, you know what?
Most fans don't understand it.
It would be no different than if I went into a courtroom and somebody said to me, analyze that trial. I'd be a fish out of water. I'm not a paralegal. I'm not a lawyer. I'm not a judge.
And you're not that smart.
You know?
Right.
I've been hit in the head with a football too many times.
But you do have the basic understanding, and I think fans don't have the basic understanding of what they're watching.
Some do, some
don't.
I
think they watch and see a guy catch the ball, they see a guy run the ball, but they don't see the detail that goes into that.
Right.
But anyway, what I wanted to talk about was the interception for Smith that he threw.
Yeah.
I know a lot of people are on him, but if you go back and look at that play, three of the four guys ran hitches, and I think it was Poe or Lewis who he threw it to, ran a go route.
Lewis.
I believe he was supposed to run a hitch.
Well, see, Marvin, honestly, I don't know what his route was.
No, we don't.
All I know is that in the post-game press conference, Ben McAdoo basically blamed Geno Smith. So, I mean, that's about as much as I can tell on whose fault that was.
Coach called it a blind throw.
Which is not a positive, by the way.
That indicates it's on the QB.
Right.
Right. We don't know what it was.
No, we don't.
If you look at it, it looked like all four were supposed to run hitches. But if you go back and look at that play, you would see three of the four ran hitches.
And you know, Marvin, you might be right, but all I know is that Ben McAdoo did not seem very pleased with Geno Smith about that throw after the game.
Okay, my other thought about this guy Bam Bam on Flowers.
And by the way, Bam Bam's a very good caller, and he's a good guy, by the way.
He's been a good long time. I was a little surprised that he decided to go that way, but okay.
I heard him on here before, but my thing with Flowers, he's not going to be an all-pro right away. You're going to have to let him work.
He may never be. You don't know. He may never be.
Right.
He's just got to be good enough. Yeah. He's just got to be good enough.
That's all right. My thing is, one of the sacks that was given up, I don't believe a lot of those sacks this past week was his. But the one that the guy came free, if you look, that looked like that was a screen pass, wide receiver screen, because Johnson moved to his left. And you can see them blocking. You can see Flowers does not touch the defensive end. He actually runs towards the corners to make those blocks.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then he got sacked. He sort of ran into the sack.
The question is whether or not Flowers should have chipped that guy before he moved. And again, I don't know the assignment. I don't know the play, so I don't know the answer.
Right. I mean, that may be something to that. They normally do chip off on that play. And you may be.
It's a good point. I don't know.
On that.
There are so many variables that need to be considered when you want to, in quotations marks, assign a sack to a lineman. So many variables, and I will tell you that is probably one of the most difficult, if not the most difficult thing that I have a hard time doing when I look at the film every week, because there are so many variables.
And it's funny. I want to just add on this, Marvin, real quick, and then we got one more call we got to get to. We'll have games last year where me and Papa will watch a play, and Paul can be with us too. We watch a play, we're like, wow, it really looks like this guy screwed up. This is this guy's fault. And then, you know, Sean O'Hara, David Deal, Moisey into the room. Hey, guys, David, come take a look at this. And then he will tell us something about that particular play, and me, Bob, and Paul will be sitting there and go, wow. So it was really player B's fault and not player A's fault. Even though when you look at the tape three different times, you're like, boy, the left guard here must have screwed up. But when David Deal and Sean O'Hara looks at it, they'll be like, well, John, what you don't know is that the – left tackle was supposed to block down, or the center was supposed to sweep over the guy's front shoulder. And this is
it happens fairly
frequently, for
and,
that matter.
Right.
And to capsulize real quick, I want you to stay right there. Real quick, to build off of that, there was a game last year where Bob and I think John was in lunchroom too, or you came in later, and we were talking about how we thought a particular Giants linebacker had a solid game, and he got destroyed on one of the analytics sites as being like the worst linebacker in the NFL that weekend.
Yeah.
And we were like, how could they say that? So I know I checked with one of the coaches. I think Bobby did. You might have too. And we got confirmation from the coaches. The guy graded out really, really well. But the web analytics site said he was like the worst linebacker in the league. So then Twitter blows up. And all the fans on the web forums are blowing up that this guy is horse manure. Well, of course, it was entirely inaccurate. That's what happens.
And we run into the same thing where I coach. We're not at the college or pro level, but we do watch film. And we don't know who made the mistake until we see the film at times.
Of course.
And I can understand that. But my last two, I know I only have a short time, is when Paul was talking about the guy, Bam Bam, was talking about Flowers getting beat all the time. And I agree with Paul that the offensive team has the upper hand when they're practicing. And that,
you mean the defensive team?
I'm sorry. The defensive team has the
correct
upper hand.
Correct.
And also what happens on the offense, when we start our practices in August, the offenses are timing. Everything
That's
is done
correct.
On timing. Mm-hmm. And on the defense, they're automatically in an attacking mode.
Mm-hmm.
So they're always going to have the upper hand because they're not based on timing. It's just they're attacking the ball.
Sir, you coach high school?
Offensively, it's timing.
Sir, you coach high school football?
Yes, I coached in Massachusetts. And
thank you.
Not to blow my own horn, 23 of my guys went to college ball.
Awesome.
And two of them played NFL.
Awesome. And I appreciate so much your phone call, and I appreciate you bringing that to the forefront.
Thank you, Marvin. We got to run.
So that, that can back up what I was trying to say. Thank you. There's a guy from experience.
And
that's good stuff.
Andrew in New Jersey will wrap us up today. What's up, Andrew?
Guys, I wanted to talk about the running backs.
Sure.
And last year, when I met you guys at the facility, day one training camp, it's different Giants than the Jets. The Giants let you the press go into the cafeteria. With the Jets, you always need somebody escorting you. But so I walk into the facility, and the very first Eli Manning walking through the hallway, the big gun. Then I turn into the cafeteria, and a player, I wasn't quite sure who it was, but now I think it's Paul Perkins. And I'm only 5'10", and I, like, towered over him. And David Deal, I met him doing his show, and he towers over me. So I just thought, this guy looks like a Dave Meggett, which Paul remembers. That's from our era. So I just can't see him being an every down back. And I saw on your Giants.com, play 60. He looks a lot bigger. So my question is, did he put on muscle weight, or is it just the video that's making him? He looks much thicker than when I saw him.
He's a little thicker. I agree with that.
Paul Perkins, is he bigger, more muscular than he was when he was a rookie?
Yeah, a little bit.
I couldn't tell you percentage of body fat or anything, but I agree with John. He does look a little bit bigger.
You mean you're with him back in medical with
the
tape measure poking up with the thing? No,
not with the training staff. No.
All right, Andrew, go ahead. Finish up real quick.
I just want to say that I think the Giants made a mistake when they paid Olivier Vernon all that money because they paid him as if he was like Lawrence Taylor or Reggie White. So now they don't have the money to sign a good running back or another offensive lineman. So I just that puzzles me that they paid him, who's a good player, but he's not Ray Lewis or one of those type players.
Andrew,
why did they pay him so much? I know it was a buyer's market.
Real quick.
Thank you, Andrew. We got to run, pal.
Real quick. Giants elevated themselves overnight to be the number one defense in the NFC last year.
And Vernon had a lot to do with that.
He sure did. He did it with a bad hand. I'm going to tell you, he's going to the Pro Bowl this year. He's going to have a monster season.
I think he'll be Pro Bowl deserving. I will never predict what the voters are going to do.
That's true.
because you know how it goes with Pro Bowl voting. You know how that goes.
I know.
But, yeah, I think look, he's one of the best run-defending defensive ends in the league. He might not get you 15 sacks, but I think he'll get you between 8 and 13.
I think he's going double-digit this year.
I think he could, too, absolutely. So I would say, if I had to guess, I'd say between 10 and 13. That's where he'd probably land.
And just remember.
And I think he's an excellent player.
All season, he was top five in the NFL in pressures, quarterback hurries. All season long, very consistent in getting heat on the passer.
And by the way, Dave Dominic wrote here that I can announce this at the end of the show. I will announce this at the very end of the show. Apparently, Sean Drawn and JT Thomas are both coming off PUP. They passed their physical. What did I say?
You said Drawn.
Sorry.
It says, that's how it's spelled.
Sorry.
It's Drawn.
Well, it wasn't that big of a difference.
I know. I just want to make sure that in case they yell out from the stands.
Sean Drone and JT Thomas coming off PUP today, passed their physicals. So there you go. They'll be out there.
All right.
That's it.
Okay.
Paul's heading out to practice. I will do as well. Paul and Lance tomorrow, and then I'll be back on Friday with Feegs. We'll see you. Everyone, have a great day on Giants.com. Have a good one, everyone.